Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, and we are very happy to have you with us on this Thursday morning, the 30th of January. In just a few moments, we'll be joined by our entire panel. WAMC's Alan Chartok will be here, as will Albany journalism professor and University at Albany journalist.
World traveler.
And investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. And of course, Ray Graff is already here. Yeah. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm all you have for right now.
Well, they're on their way in.
I see Are they? Them.
They're a little walking music, a little traveling music. Yes.
We should get a bat pole. They could just come straight in. Yes, Commissioner Gordon.
Absolutely. Coming up later in the show, we're going to learn about the combination between chocolate and tea. We're also going to have Sean Stone and Graham McKenna, and Alan will be in the Congressional Corner. We're going to talk to the Grammy Award-winning maestro of the Albany Symphony Orchestra, David
Allen Miller. How great is that?
And much, much more. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get the panel assembled, and when we come back, we will talk about the news of the day. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Sarah, stop playing with your phone. I'm trying to show you my new Lando Calrissian t-shirt.
I'm not just playing with my phone, Ian. I'm actually helping to pay your salary.
Say what now?
I'm testing out WAMC's new text-to-pledge system. All you do is text WAMC to 41444, and you can send a secure pledge and become a member of WAMC.
That sounds pretty easy, and I still use a Walkman.
Pledge $25 or more, and we'll send you texting gloves to say thank you for your support. Just text WAMC to 41444.
I'm Brian Shields, WAMC News, inviting you to join me weekday evenings at 6 o'clock for Northeast Report Late Edition. The day is winding down, and All Things Considered has wrapped up its work for the day. But WAMC is there with regional news from our bureau chiefs, a Wall Street and business update, and the weather summary. Northeast Report Late Edition, weekday evenings at 6 o'clock on WAMC Northeast Public Radio.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I introduced them, but they weren't they weren't in the room. We're testing the mics. They work. That's excellent.
I turned my head.
Just turning.
You did.
Yes.
Turn your head.
Yeah, but
off.
Which way did you turn it? One way Joe gets it. The other that. Way we get it.
She was very nice. It was into the crook of the arm.
The
yeah, that's
I did
good.
It the regulation way.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I have a horrible cold. I'm going to infect you all.
Thanks.
That's too late.
It's
2 days before the
Shields
fun
already has it.
Perfect timing. Welcome aboard. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, newsman Ray Graff, and University of Albany professor and investigative reporter
Rosemary Armeo.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Rosemary. You know, you take off.
I know.
You take
I know.
Off the name
I've
tags.
Been
I'm done.
Too long.
Let's talk about the news of the day, beginning with the story that was top and center of the New York Times this morning, which has to do with Governor Chris Christie in the state of New Jersey. According to newly obtained emails sent among the participants, the first topic of discussion on the agenda was review of concepts for flood control measures at Rockefeller property, a reference to a $1 billion office complex proposed at the north end of town. This is in Hoboken, New Jersey. This once again goes back to May 8th, where the severe rainstorm left the streets of the city flooded once again, causing Dawn Zimmer to recall the problems with Hurricane Sandy. So she sent a letter to Governor Christie imploring him to help with Hoboken's ongoing flooding emergency and attached photos of cars and water. And she was due to meet the next day with officials of the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection when she hoped to talk about protecting Hoboken from the next deluge, if you will. Mayor Zimmer, through a spokesman, said on Wednesday that she went to the meeting but refused to discuss the project, feeling it was premature to do so. And this project being this major Rockefeller project, which Christie has ties to, the developer of the Rockefeller Group, which had long been trying to gain approval from local officials, sent two executives, two lobbyists, and an engineer to the meeting.
Well, I have to say that I am regretting a bet I made with Alan on this program not long ago. He said that he did not think Christie would be stuck with this and that there's not criminal behavior. And I said I disagreed. And then I've read this very long and detailed account in the New York Times, and I don't think they did anything wrong. I can't get it from here. The Rockefeller Project, not connected to the Rockefeller family for years, by the way, was trying to get approval in to build this major project in the north, in an undeveloped north part of the city. They had helped with flood control. The mayor had publicly thanked him. I'm not sure why she was against the project or why she didn't want to involve him in the discussions about flood control, of which they have an interest and had paid money. At one point, I'll just say one last thing, and
sure,
then, Alan, I want you to respond.
Yeah, sure.
It's really interesting. One of her objections had been that they wanted to build in the north side of the city where there's no mass transit. It's all the hub is, or the transportation hub is on the south. So the developers paid for a new station to be built there. They were trying to do everything they could to get this project built.
Okay, so I hear you, but I don't remember our bet at all.
Oh, good.
And B, I have always thought that Chris Christie's people made a huge mistake here, because it's like a ball of yarn. You start to become defensive about it.
Are you talking about the traffic jam, which is, I think, completely different?
It wasn't completely separate in that newspapers have done and the media have done a great job of sort of parsing and showing how the politics of Christie were heavily involved in all of this. So now they've got the various mayors. They wanted a re-election campaign. The New York Times has done a fabulous job, you know, on this. And so I think the better strategy would not have been to try to throw a Hail Mary pass and hope that, you know, everybody would go away. Once the genie was out of the bottle, he was in real trouble and still is. I don't think we've begun to see what's going to end up happening as a result of all of this.
Well, I think you're right that's why Hoboken Mayor Zimmer has come out now with the accusation. But when you look at the case really in depth, which is what the New York Times did, Christie doesn't look so bad. I mean, he has connections with the Rockefeller Project. His connection is that the lawyer for the firm is the partner in that firm is a friend of his, the guy he put on the Port Authority, the guy who's since left because he was involved in the traffic jam. So there is a connection there. But the project itself was rather good for Hoboken. I can't see that he was trying to ram it down their throats.
It started with Corzine too.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely. It's been the mayor has always wanted to put the brakes on this project. So she said, we have to have
wary.
A study. Yeah, very wary. She said, we have to have a study. So okay, they waited like 3 years for the study. The study came out and said this is a good project.
So we don't really know why the mayor wanted to put the brakes on.
I don't know, at least from reading this.
And we don't know that, but we do know that. So you say, all right, well, if you want trouble, you want help with your flooding, then A, this is going to help, and B, you do this and we'll help you.
Well, it wasn't worded that way. It was like, you know, if you want help in this, you need to involve these folks. And that seems reasonable. When I read the story, maybe I'm reading it wrong, I'd love to hear from other people. It was like, they've helped you in other ways. It is to their benefit to control flooding. They will help. We can bring them in and they'll foot some of the bill.
You know, there are still people in Albany, New York, who think that the putting up of the Rockefeller Plaza was one big mistake. That ruined neighborhoods.
It decimated a neighborhood.
Right. Absolutely.
Same with the South Mall in Albany, for that matter.
Yeah.
Isn't that what I was talking about?
That's what we mean.
I thought you said Rockefeller Center.
No, the Rockefeller.
Rockefeller.
And
yes.
if you remember, anybody who's ever been on it, and I think almost everybody in our listening area at one point or another has been over here, there are two roads that go through it. One goes, and then it turns around, you have to go back. But those roads were supposed to go forward.
That's right.
And decimate other neighborhoods. And I think that they were supposed to meet up with the thruway at some point, you know, up there. So that there were, I may be wrong about this, by the way. I just want to know that's what I've heard. But if, in fact, this turns out to be true, there are genuine reasons for mayors to oppose projects in parts of their cities.
I looked at that because that, of course, is what I was thinking of. You know, this is another Rockefeller project. but it's not. It's in a completely decimated old industrial area. It looks like looks like nothing. Yeah,
like bus.
Yeah, the biggest thing it has going for it is that it's got this great view of Manhattan.
But Rosemary, don't you know that people are still arguing, pro the South Mall, as Rich put it, that it took out slums and it took out other things that were there. But we know there were neighborhoods there. So those kinds of arguments can be made in virtually every situation where you want to build. No?
There's no question that she has some objection to that construction, Alan. I do not know what it is. I can tell you at the end of the story, it says that in submitting their flood control plans, the city has used part of the Rockefeller Project property as a retention pond. That doesn't seem to me to be a big improvement over a housing development.
So the question here is, as it so often is, did he do anything wrong? And you're saying, I'm looking at this, it may look bad, it may be a little
fishy. Remember the lieutenant governor said, the mayor's account of what happened is wrong and it's illogical. And I read this and I can sort of see the other side now.
Yeah, you can see the illogical
side.
The
mayor did say she would testify under oath.
Yeah.
That this was said to her.
Right.
And that this was the quid pro quo that was in the deal. And I did not see the lieutenant governor or anybody else saying they would testify under oath, too.
But what this story does is change the view. I think the lieutenant governor probably did say, if you want real help for the city, you got to get on board on this project. And again, it's because the project was putting private money into improvements that would benefit it.
But you can see two
sides when you read this.
But there is also a journalistic side to this, which is if you read the contemporary accounts of this whole thing, you get the feeling that maybe he did do something wrong. In other words, that the journalism we are reading leads one, the headlines and other things, to those conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question about that. And that's, fairly typical. You go to trials as a journalist and you're convinced what the jury is going to come out with. How could they do but otherwise? And they frequently do.
Yeah.
In our listening area, there was a major case in Berkshire County, where I live, with a young man who was known to my family, who was said to be, and it was, the papers were filled with it, as was everything else, had done something wrong sexually with his charges at the school that he was a counselor at.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I'll tell you, this guy was fried. And the jury just came back
said
absolutely not.
Wow. Yeah, you don't recover from that. Yeah,
and you don't recover from that.
We're going to take a break, and we'll recover. We're going to talk about other issues. We'll be right back after the short break.
Support comes from Oakwood Friends School, Poughkeepsie, New York, an independent college preparatory boarding and day school for grades 6 through 12, focusing on the individual learner. OakwoodFriends.org. Bridgeside Grill, Sunderland Center, Massachusetts, offering lunch and dinner daily and brunch on weekends, featuring seasonal outdoor dining. Member of CISA since 2007, BridgesideGrill.com for menu. And Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York. Purchasing estate jewelry, coins, silver, fine arts, and collections. Sponsor of Antiques Roadshow. MarkLawson.com.
Great show, Did you see the movie? Did you see the movie Inside
Llewyn
Davis?
I did not.
Well, there's a great scene in it in which the protagonist starts yelling at the zither player. At the zither player, who was supposed to be Gene Ritchie, I don't know. And the husband comes and socks him. But anyway, I thought that's why you put this on for us, this great music, this great sort of zithery music.
That's all Dave Hopper.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. He's probably seen the movie. Did you see it, Dave? No.
No, I didn't see the movie. I want to talk about another story having to do with Tri-City area politics, tri-state area politics. Let's talk about the Staten Island lawmaker, Congressman Representative Michael Grimm. I thought this was curious because the New York Times has this article fairly prominently in the paper today. And the first line is, Representative Michael Grimm is a hothead. Okay. So then you see the video. They have the video online, which is, and they go on to clarify that at least is what some politicians and journalists who have tangled with the Staten Island lawmaker have maintained for years. The criticism, however, never made much of a dent. And then came the State of the Union speech. So this scene unfolded as a New York New York One, the cable news channel for New York City, began to bring in New York representatives to talk about the State of the Union and to get their response, their reaction.
Yeah, we did it here too. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. And so into the interview area of the Capitol Rotunda. And Mr. Grimm talked to a journalist and started to talk about, a very predictable reaction, partisan reaction to the speech. And then the journalist, Mr. Scotto, turned and said that he wanted to ask the representative about an ongoing federal investigation into Mr. Grimm's fundraising. At that point, Mr. Grimm said, I'm only here to talk about... I'm only here to talk about the State of the Union, and he stormed off. Then the reporter continued his stand up and said, obviously he doesn't want to talk about that, and he starts to give a little background on the investigation. With that, the representative then comes back into the scene.
Mistake.
Pushes the guy, the cameras are rolling, pushes the guy over to the left-hand side, all of this on camera, of course, and says... Well, he says some things that I can't repeat on the radio.
Well, just let's say
the memorable word
is not man enough, and suggested that I'll break you in half like a boy, and then ultimately said that he was going to toss him over the balcony.
Yeah. That's my favorite part.
Yeah. Two parts, presumably.
Yes. Yeah, he'd break you in half and then throw him over the balcony. Right. So, I'm curious of the story of one thing of, you know, all right, so is this, obviously this isn't good. And especially to have it on tape, but also, of the press's reaction to it, because I read this piece and I thought, you know what, they look at, and this sort of ties into the Christie thing too, where they look at this guy, a lot of people have tangled with him. They obviously haven't had a good relationship with him, and now here's their chance to get him.
Well, I think he got himself.
Sure.
He
no,
did
absolutely.
All of this.
I know. Yeah.
I hear what Joe is saying, be honest with you.
Well, I mean, to start off the article by saying...
Remember I said, don't fool with the press, because they'll band together, and you will be horse meat.
This was all over social media yesterday, long before he gave his apology. The video went viral. I don't know. I think bad behavior comes out.
Well, it was bad behavior, all right. No two ways about it. But how often is it repeated by other people, you know, who have to deal with the press? I mean, I made a point on the Media Project this week, Rosemary. You may or may not remember that.
We recorded about 10 minutes ago.
In which I say, you know, politicians and the press are adversaries. They are.
Sure.
And politicians, no matter what they say on Jefferson Jackson Day, they hate the press, you know, because they're going to come, they're going to ask you about where you took this money from and, and that's their job, you know, to sort of do all of that. And so if you really give them sodium pentothal, or, you know, truth serum, and say, what do you think of the press? You're going to get an earful about people who punch up stories, who put in the first line of the story, he's a bully.
He's a hothead.
Hothead or whatever else. And they did a similar story. The Times did a very good story, I thought, on Christie, in which they point out he's a bully. In order to understand this, you have to understand the adversarial relationship.
Okay, you can feel whatever you want. We have adversarial relationships. There's no question. A lot of men don't like women, but in our modern society, in our modern society, you are not allowed to express that dislike in the form of physical punishment or threats.
No, it was very stupid.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. We'll let you think about that one for a minute. You're welcome, more than welcome, to write to us, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. When we return, we'll continue with the other stories of the day. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to The Roundtable. Very civilized today.
Yes, I'm going to throw you off this balcony right now. I'm going to throw you off this
You're break not
you
in man half, enough.
Like a break you in half like a boy, and throw you off that program.
You know, I was just thinking that all of the polling shows that politicians are held in, you know, very low regard, particularly in the House of Representatives. But so are reporters.
Yeah.
So well, there must be some people out there who are saying, "Good. Glad you did it."
Now, well, John, I'm sorry, but John writes in and says,
is he threatening to break actually, you in half like a boy as well?
Actually, oddly enough, I think John's email ultimately exploded and went into my junk mail just as I was starting to read it. So I apologize.
Terrible. Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Okay. It says, "You have the facts out of order. He did not push the reporter. The reporter backed up, confirmed by the reporter." I don't think he said he pushed the reporter, but he did move into the reporter, right?
Went into his face.
Yes. And then he threatened to throw the reporter over the balcony first, then break him in half.
Oh, okay. Well, it's easier once you're softened
like
up from hitting
boy.
The ground. After, yeah.
Yeah. So we have it out of order. And
I'm glad we have the threat in the exact wording.
Well, they may need this. You
we
know?
Haven't, we haven't quoted crazy words from a politician so much since Mayor Ford in Toronto, have we?
Who was back in the news, I saw.
Oh, good.
What's he doing now?
Well, they found another video, and he was dancing and going crazy, and then they claimed it was an old video,
yeah.
And so
he was drunk, right? He was on crack. That's his excuse.
Yeah, and his poll numbers are up.
That's because it's the end of civilization. I've told you this before. You can expect this sort of thing.
So let us talk about. Anybody else have anything to say about Representative Grimm? Okay, there's a silence
Nobody
in the room.
I can tell you this much: it's no fairy tale.
Nice. Well, I'm glad we.
Thanks for bringing it up again, Joe.
Ball on the tee for that one, didn't I? The Washington Post has significantly increased its budget and plans to make dozens of newsroom hires.
Yay.
Wow.
That has to be good news.
Under its new owner, the Amazon founder Jeffrey Bezos, the paper's executive editor Marty Baron said this in an interview yesterday. Mr. Bezos has closely consulted with the Post's leadership in plotting its growth strategy, and the moves represent his first mark on the paper, Mr. Bezos's first mark on the paper. The Post will introduce several initiatives this year. There will be 5 new politics reporters, as well as photo editors, data visualization specialists, news desk staff, and web designers. Who knew you could do that?
Isn't this great for the newspaper industry, except for one thing that bothers me about it?
Okay.
And that is that we see this kind of thing. Yahoo hires all kinds of people and others.
Katie Couric.
Yeah. Well, yes. And then what happens down the road is anybody's guess. So, you know, you make this foray. We do know that we don't know a thing about what it's going to save the newspaper industry. You know, they try paywalls. In some cases it works. In some cases it doesn't work. They try to punch up the stories, and in some cases it works, it doesn't work. But sooner or later, if you've hired a lot of people and it doesn't work, bye-bye.
Well, and that's kept newspapers for the last, 10 years now, downsizing and downsizing, right, and not doing things.
Sure.
So I applaud that there's a new effort. Anything that puts money in and takes a risk, I'm in favor
sure.
of.
They have a new owner,
the guy
who has unlimited
Amazon.
Amount of money.
Yeah.
And so if it's a eleemosynary or philanthropic enterprise that he's good. Doing, he wants to own a newspaper, and he's going to put unlimited amounts of money in. Great.
I mean, unlimited money soon becomes limited money if you continue to lose money on an entity.
Well, not necessarily if you have enough.
Okay.
He's running an experiment in how to save the business, how to change the business model. That is a worthy enterprise, whether it works or not. I hope it does work. The negative I've heard in this is if you look at the list of what he wants to do, there's nothing in there about local news. There's nothing in there about increased coverage of the your home, your community next
to you.
No,
it's very much about making it a political paper, isn't it?
Political and digital.
Yes.
Well, it is, of course, the you know,
the nation's capital.
And
also, I mean, the other thing that I have to say, you know, this was the same Jeff Bezos who recently was on 60 Minutes saying that we want to deliver drones. Your packages with drones. And
right.
I'm like, wow, that'd be a cool way to get your paper the morning.
The Jetsons.
Well, the guy's a visionary, and America has been built on the dreams of those kinds of people. So I applaud him, and I hope he has success.
And I hope he keeps. I lived in Washington for a while, and I hope he keeps doing what they did in those days. And it's a long time ago, but they had more comics.
Yes.
In that newspaper than anything I have ever seen before. I mean, if you were reading six newspapers in New York in order to follow the comics, all you needed was the Washington Post
right.
To do that. And I think comics are often the most read thing in the newspaper.
I don't know if they are anymore.
I think the
Beetle Bailey Initiative. We'll see how it works out.
I think Rosemary is frowning.
I think we're showing our age. I'll have to check with them. I don't think my students.
Well, I mean, Marmaduke is fairly,
high and lowest.
And Gasoline Alley, the guy's about 198 now. Jeez. The head guy.
Is he still on?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that I know a lot of people now get their comics online. They have them. They have them.
Websites.
They have them texted to them every day so that they get their fix of whatever strip they want. Or they can also go on their Yahoo or Google pages and say, these are the comics that I want received on my desktop every morning.
Well, I think Gary Trudeau is the best cartoonist we have, and he's rarely on cartoon pages. He's usually on editorial pages.
Well, in some cases he is. In some cases he's not, because they want to make a point.
Didn't he retire?
Too political. Mm-mm.
No, he's still working in Doonesbury. And it's still a very popular strip. And how did we get talking about that?
I started. And by the way,
put us off the rails again.
I only meant it to be sort of a yucker.
Took it up seriously. Okay, our fault.
Serious.
Okay.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with other stories of the day. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries of Clarkson University, accepting applications for RiverU, a 6-credit undergrad summer program in river ecology, green engineering, and policy, in Beacon and aboard the Clearwater. RIVERU.org. The Bard of On, presenting Sharon Isbin, Stanley Jordan, and Romero Lubombo, February 7th, and the Met Live in HD, Dvorak's Rusalka, February 8th. Bardofon.org for information. And Adams Ferriker Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries. AdamsFarms.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable and our discussion this morning. Rosemary Armeo is here, Ray Graff and Alan Chartok. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Heard the story on the BBC yesterday, and it was also on NPR last night, and I thought it was very interesting. Scientists in Japan showed stem cells can now be made quickly just by dipping blood cells into acid.
Yes.
There's a little more to
lower
it than
pH.
That, but yes. Stem cells can transform into any tissue and are already being trialed for healing the eye, the heart, and the brain.
Yeah.
The latest development published in the journal Nature could make the technology cheaper, faster, and safer. The human body is built of cells with a specific role, nerve cells, liver cells, muscle cells, and that role is fixed. However, stem cells can become any other type of cell, and they have become a major field of research in medicine for their potential to regenerate the body. This becomes obviously an issue because stem cell research has been so debated in this country and has been such the subject of controversy. We have had a little movement with the current administration, but not a lot.
I think the science has changed, and that's ended the controversy. The problem was that the major source of stem cells was fetuses.
Yes.
So it got tied up with our abortion insanity. But now they've discovered that you can get it from lots of things, umbilical cords, you can scrape it off of skin. The ability to obtain stem cells in a non-morally objectionable way has changed.
Yeah, but it is interesting because even in that debate, and there were many conservatives who I sort of thought that we're shifting in that direction, even when we went back to the fetus lines, was because a lot of people have Parkinson's disease, and a lot of people, you know, say, okay, you know, this is not philosophical. This is my kid. This is my life.
Oh, Alan, you've done it again.
What happened?
You have something in 15 minutes. I don't know what it is, but you have something in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Please turn off your devices. On,
it's that Christina again. He did it to me.
Yeah, no. Sure. The interesting thing about this is, you know, one of the doctors who is connected to this says, well, it'll be a while before this turns into anything. And we want to know why a lower pH shock triggers the reprogramming of the cells and why it doesn't happen when we drink soda or have vinegar or lemon.
Yeah. Ooh, interesting. Yeah. I just hope that they do it quickly.
Yeah, it looks
72
like...
72-year-old wants it done quickly.
What do you need done?
Regeneration.
I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Yeah.
But whatever it is...
But by the way, that's where we're going. I mean, we're going to see much of our current medical thought replaced by stem cell,
by genetic
splicing and all the rest. That's the next thing. We'll be looking at things like, I think, you know, breast cancer. Removal as back in the dark ages eventually.
Although it does scare me. If you read the article, it's very carefully written, except for the part where they use trial as a verb. Ugh.
Yeah.
But it's very carefully written to say a major discovery is claimed. They're not quite sure how it works. How come it, you know, there's a lot of skepticism in it.
Yeah.
And one guy is saying it's hard to believe this is true, although with all the great minds working on it, it must be. There's a lot of thought in here that maybe we're jumping the gun.
It looks a bit too good to be true.
True.
But the number of experts who have reviewed and checked this, I'm sure that it is, this prominent scientist said, going on to say, if this works in people as well as it does in mice, it looks faster, cheaper, and possibly safer than other cell reprogramming technologies, which this is the study is ultimately showing that shocking blood cells with acid could also trigger the transformation into some stem cells. This term, STAP. STAP, stimulus triggered acquisition of pluripotency cells.
You just like saying
easy
that.
For you to say.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, you know, as somebody went through progressive education, could you give us an example of how they used it as a verb?
They trialed it.
The
use of this.
But I mean,
we have many people
not experimented with, tested. Many good verbs exist that are actually verbs.
Well, there are.
I Facebooked it.
That's how things get done.
I Facebooked it. I Googled it. That's
but we have a lot of English majors who listen to this and talk to us all the time. So I wanted to throw them that bone.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough.
I'm kind of a strict grammarian.
Oh, that's good.
But isn't this a classic case? I mean, of the media doesn't really care all that much about science and then jumps on something inexplicably. I mean, look at cold fusion. Same thing. The media was all over cold fusion. Everyone.
That whole physics thing, that Hosen's thing.
In other words,
didn't happen.
You got to take a step back.
But wait a second. Suppose this happens. Suppose it
works. That's great.
That's good.
Well, I think we should know that it's coming and it's happening.
We had it on our website yesterday, I'll tell you that.
And you're the webmaster.
It's difficult to cover it because you do want people to know about it, and it would be major news. But judging the scientific validity of experiments is difficult for media. We're not scientists.
Right. But I'm with Alan. I mean, don't we want to sort of know?
Absolutely.
This wasn't Nature, which is
a very good journal.
So. I want more science news. I'm just saying it's interesting what gets picked up in the mass media.
Right, right.
Well, I think we know it when we see it. To me, this is... for everybody
pretty
who
great.
Is struggling with major disease, the rest of it, this is pretty big stuff.
Let us go now to the story that, you know, we take requests on the show.
Oh, terrific.
We take requests.
Terrific.
This was Alan's request.
Melancholy Baby.
Discuss.
Can you play Far, Far Away?
Great minds think alike.
So nearly
silly minds.
Nearly 20 women were arraigned in Manhattan Community Court on Wednesday on prostitution charges, far more than the court ordinarily handles in one day. The reason? The Super Bowl.
Sure.
4 days before the Super Bowl, just a few blocks from the NFL extravaganza known as Super Bowl Boulevard on Broadway in Midtown, which is just crazy. Were you down there this weekend? Did you?
No. We were there last weekend, but yeah. I would assiduously avoid it this weekend.
No, I know this weekend, but I didn't know if you saw that they're pretty much from 50th down to 42nd has just been taken over by the Fox television network, and it is. It is the Super Bowl Boulevard, as they're calling it. And it's just insane. So 20 women were arraigned in prostitution charges, far more than the court ordinarily handles. Also, undercover police operations used online ads promoting encounters in hotel rooms in and around Times Square. And it was something that they said that they were going to do all along, was crack down on prostitution leading up to the Super Bowl. And the court added social services staff members to accommodate the number of women coming through its doors. And the women who were traveling from outside areas to New York City offer.
Well, why is this a surprise? An enormous event that draws thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Isn't that always going to happen?
And not only that, but, you know, I hate to tell you, but in my past, when I worked for the New York City Police Department as a consultant.
I thought it was going to be like client number 40.
Yeah.
No, in my past, I was charged with, they were cleaning up the Midtown area.
Oh, I see.
And I was the professor who was doing the LEAP evaluation. And they had me riding around in the truck.
What's a LEAP evaluation?
Law enforcement something.
Okay.
A long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. And they had me riding around in the truck picking up the prostitutes, of which there were many different clients. In other words, there were the people in the sex workers in the hotel area who were generally the upper class of this thing, and then they would go to 8th Avenue where there were people who did not fit into that same criteria.
Yes.
They had no trouble in finding them. In fact, they found them every night, the same people, put them in the truck.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm astounded that this is now huge news.
Well, it's two things. I mean, one, to your point, and this sort of goes on, in full disclosure here, my father was a venereal disease control officer in Washington, D.C., as well as in the city of Detroit.
Right.
And that was his job, to go up and to make sure that both client and...
Provider,
thank you. Received the necessary health inspections, and quite a thrill for my mother to have this these vials of blood
of
in our refrigerator overnight.
How was the day at the office, dear?
Oh, pretty good.
And every once in a while, Dad would come home and tell us about the famous person in D.C. who he had in the back of the truck. So all good stuff. But the reason this makes news is because this, for both nonprofit organizations, human trafficking and sex trafficking, anti-prostitution and anti-sex trafficking groups, the Super Bowl has become a real problem. It has had the Super Bowl has had an impact on host city's underground sex industry. Mm. It's something that they've looked to every year as thousands of fans pour into the town. And so there have been these various projects. The Polaris Project, a nonprofit organization that fights human trafficking, has really worked very hard in all of these host cities over the past few years. There was big concern in New York because there is already a large trade anyway. They have been working on this, some of it's legal, some of it's illegal, but they want to monitor it as much as possible.
Monitor, so I think that's probably meaning dissuade people from.
Well, absolutely. There are billboards on the Interstate 95 corridor, increase the number of people working its hotlines. The New Jersey Attorney General began a campaign more than a year ago. Local volunteers are delivering soap with any trafficking tips, tip lines printed on the packaging. So, and basically they're saying, unfortunately, when you have visitors, this is something that increases.
So the hotels, I take it, are all taken in New York. I have to be careful about the way I do this, but are you telling me that if a very wealthy executive, female executive, says to somebody who works in the mailroom in her corporation, let me take you to New York and treat you to the whole weekend, that isn't prostitution. You see, as Bessie Smith sang it, there's lots of ways to sell it, baby. And my feeling is that our definitions of what constitute prostitution are sort of beg the question.
Why would you open this line of conversation with 3 minutes left?
Yeah, really. If you're that little time, I just have one thing to say about this story. It only proves that men are pigs.
Agreed.
You should agree. Yes.
Well, also.
Oink.
Also, there were also men. There were men charged with prostitution as well.
Sure.
Show me the numbers.
Okay.
Well, 20 isn't a lot, you know.
No, I know, but why are we working on this story? I really think prostitution stories abound in the media because male reporters love doing it. It arouses prurient interest. I used to forbid this when I
worked
overseas.
So a female reporter did the story, though?
Well, there's one on the AP, not exactly the same story that I just showed to Rosemary.
Oh, this was from Mary Pyland.
Officials say 18 people are being rounded up in New York City on allegations they sold party packs of cocaine and sex to high-end clients and texted clients to advertise ahead of this week's
and
Super Bowl.
Notice
festival.
The difference. The woman was reporting about sex trafficking. She took it from a whole different angle than this story, which doesn't even mention exploitation of women.
Yeah.
So too often prostitution stories in our media and in the media around the world, in the third world especially, it's just prurient.
I think we have time for one more topic, I believe, and I would like that to be the coal. This story, I mean, my God, if you watch it, look at the pictures, it's just incredible of the winter storm that causing chaos in the South, and
including in New Orleans, where my son lives.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
New Orleans, and
boy, nobody went out of their houses. They don't know anything about snow or ice. Yeah.
Storm killed at least 7 people on Tuesday, swept over a region about 60 million, largely unaccustomed to ice and snow, stretching from Texas through Georgia and into the Carolinas. There were kids sleeping in schools, people stranded on the highways. Yeah. They couldn't
move. It's fascinating because it wasn't that much snow. It was 2 inches in Atlanta.
Well, if you have no snow tires and no experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
And also what happened, I believe.
It was a quick...
From the news stories that I had done yesterday during Midday Magazine, everything let out at the same time.
Right.
So you had
houses,
municipalities, schools, and private businesses all letting out at exactly the same time. And that was the rub.
And before the salt trucks could get out.
Yeah.
So they were
going
out.
What salt trucks?
They had some, actually, in Atlanta. They were ready, but they couldn't get out. The roads were clogged by the time
they were
deployed.
Well, not only that, but all the pictures just showed that no vehicle had traction at all on the ice.
Yeah. The traffic director was out in this in Atlanta. He wrote a really interesting piece that was on social media about how you couldn't get out. So at first it was okay because there were enough cars. The friction melts the ice. But it was so cold that it would immediately freeze. So you have that mush and then it freezes and it gets worse and worse. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Glad I wasn't in it.
And
you get your chance.
That's right. And meanwhile, the cold weather continues. So, which has you in the condition that
it does. I have a cold in the cold.
Thank you, everyone, for taking part. We still welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Don't forget, you can also reach us via Facebook and Twitter and on our webpage. And the panel discussion is posted every day. You can hear that and also comment on it as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org and WAMC.org for the website. Rosemary, Ray, Alan, thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Throw you right off the balcony.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.